pulled into the headrest and closed my eyes. Shortly after we took off, I peeked over at him for a few seconds. His gaze was on his laptop. His eyes remained there, but I knew he sensed me watching him. "Thank you for giving Rosie a place to stay," I whispered. His jaw ticked, but he didn't lift his gaze from the legal document he was working on.
"Go to sleep, help."
And so I did.
Chapter 9. Vicious. There were two things I never told anyone about myself. Number one, I had insomnia, ever since I was about 13. When I was 22, I saw a shrink to try and fix it. He said past events were responsible for the fact I couldn't sleep to save my fucking life and suggested we meet 2 times a week. That lasted 1 month. Since then, lack of sleep had become a part of my everyday existence. I'd run on zero sleep for a few nights in a row, then pass out for a day or two to make up for it. I'd even learned to control the cycle of frustration. When I left the office late at night, instead of tossing and turning in bed like a junkie craving his fix, I went straight to a 24-hour gym and worked out. Then I'd go back to my empty apartment and read the latest thriller, whatever bestseller crap everyone was talking about, or an autobiography of a public figure I didn't completely hate. Sometimes I'd invite a woman over. Sometimes we'd fuck. Hell, sometimes we'd even talk. I wasn't against talking to the women I shared a bed with, but I never went out of my way to get them there in the first place. I had rules, and I didn't break them. No dinners, no dates, no visiting them at their place. Absolutely no fucking pillow talk. Things were my way or the highway. If they wanted me, they knew where to find me. In the morning, I'd get dressed and show up for work, freshly shaved and looking rested. I knew that the pass-out stage would eventually arrive, but I'd become better at sensing when. It didn't make my life easier, but it made the sleepless nights bearable. Number two, contrary to popular assumptions, I was capable of love. Sentimental, banal shit. Yeah, but deep down, I knew the truth. I wasn't a monster or a psychopath or a fucked-up sociopath like my stepmother. I loved. I loved all the fucking time. I loved my friends, and I loved the Raiders. I loved practicing law and shaking hands on lucrative deals. I loved traveling and working out and fucking. Fuck, I loved fucking. I glanced over at help. It wasn't easy to ignore her sleeping beside me, so close. Her face stirred the kind of chaos in me I once had tried to tame by doing shit like defy. Her lips begged me to take them in more ways than one. Her body, too. But I couldn't. Not unless it was on my fucking terms. I tried to work on the pharmaceutical merger deal. I tried to work and saw her shivering in her seat while she slept, goosebumps dotting the delicate flesh of her neck and collarbone. Tearing my gaze back to the screen, I tried to work again. But I kept stealing glances, and I kept trying to cool down the temperature my blood boiled to every time I was near her. I ended up pulling a blanket over her body. I watched her sleep for 40 minutes. 40 fucking minutes. This was bending the rules. What was worse, I wanted to break them all. With her. I tried reasoning with my cock. There was no guarantee help would get into bed with me. You could take the girl out of the church in Virginia, but you couldn't take the church out of the girl. Despite her years in New York, I suspected she still wasn't a heavy Tinder user who bed-hopped her way to her next broken heart. Plus, she seemed to hate me just as much as I hated her. And last but not least, I knew I was about to plunge headfirst into some dirty, nasty shit with my family. I couldn't afford a distraction. All I wanted was to get the help I needed from her, maybe screw her a few times, and cut her loose. Make it stop. We landed at sunset, slicing through sky the color of purple with a gold undertone, just like her hair. The bite of a promising new adventure filled my nostrils when I finally got out of the airport, armed with the girl I'd driven out of this place 10 years ago. Cliff, my family driver, was leaning against the black limo waiting for us at the curb of San Diego International's baggage claim. He rushed to snatch her duffel. I'd overnighted my luggage straight to Todos Santos and flung it into the trunk of the limo, firing off pleasantries I didn't bother acknowledging. Amelia followed behind me, her eyes darting everywhere, drinking in the view she hadn't seen in so long. I knew she'd visited her parents a few years ago when I was already in L.A., but that was the extent of it as far as I was aware. The drive to my father's mansion ticked by silently and gave me time to think and regulate my heartbeats. Cliff kept his mouth shut, probably remembering I was not my chatterbox stepmother. I didn't bother to raise the privacy glass. Help squinted at the side window, pretending I wasn't there next to her. This weekend was important to me. It was the weekend when I would finally tell my father about my plans. Help didn't mention the blanket, and I didn't mention how my brain almost fucking detonated when I caught myself doing it. Such a small gesture. Such a huge impact on my mood. At the 8-car garage behind the house, Cliff pulled her duffel from the trunk. I better head to see my parents. She jerked her thumb toward the servant's apartment. I haven't been here in a while. The accusation in her voice suggested I was to blame for that. I hope my mother's not in your kitchen. Or am I allowed inside now? Another accusation. Hey, I wasn't the one who'd made them live in the servant's apartment. Truthfully, I would have offered them a place inside the house, considering it was empty. It was Josephine who was a fucking haughty snob, but no one would have believed me. Joe's mask was solid. I'll pick you up at 8.
Tomorrow morning?
Tonight. I have an urgent meeting with my lawyer, and I need you to take notes. She wasn't going there to take notes. Originally, I'd hoped to talk her through my plans for her on the plane, but she'd fallen asleep. I sometimes forgot that other people slept. An average person would spend 25 years of their lifetime asleep. Not me. I was fucking wide awake. I was tempted to wake her up on the plane, but she looked so out of it, I was sure she wouldn't understand half the crap I had to tell her anyway, and all of it was important. At any rate, my justification for the trip seemed to pacify Help, and she shot me a polite smile. She was starting to get comfortable around me. I pitied her.
I'll have dinner with my folks and see you later then.
She clutched her duffel to her chest and ambled down the pavement leading to her former home beside the garage while I headed for the iron double doors at the front of the cold mansion where I'd once lived. Before I turned the corner, I twisted my head back toward her. She was standing outside the door to her parents' quarters. When it opened, she jumped into her mother's open arms, knotting her legs around her thick midsection and letting out a happy squeak. Her dad clapped and laughed. Soon the three of them were half crying, half laughing with joy. When I pushed my front doors open, no one was there. Nobody waited for me. But that was hardly news. My stepmother was probably already back in Cabo with her friends. Thank fuck. And my father was probably upstairs in his bed, marching his slow way to death after his third heart attack in the last 5 years. But this time, his cold, vicious heart was going to lose the battle. Death. Such a mundane thing. Everybody died. Well, eventually. But almost everyone fought against it. Sadly, for my father, he had silent enemies who prowled in the dark. One of them was his son. He was so hot on getting rid of my mother, so relieved when she finally died that he forgot his time would come too. And it did, with a little push from Mother Nature. Karma was working extra hard with this piece of work. Dad had been in great shape for a 68-year-old. He ate well, played tennis and golf, and had even cut back on the cigars. But the work of saints is done through others. It was time for everyone to get what they deserved for the death of Marie Spencer. Daryl Ryler was long since dead. Baron Spencer Sr. would soon be dead, too. And Josephine Ryler Spencer would have nothing to live for. Nothing. Dad? I called out, rooted to the foyer floor. He didn't answer. I knew he wouldn't. His third heart attack had left him weaker than ever. That was after the stroke he'd had between heart attack 2 and the most recent one. Now he was wheeled by 2 nurses everywhere and was barely able to communicate anymore. He was lucid, but his speech was gone. His ability to move his limbs had vanished too. My father could barely lift a finger to point at what he wanted or needed. He once thought of my disabled mother as a burden, a liability that marred his balance sheet. Now he'd become a liability to Josephine. What goes around comes around. I dropped my suitcase in the middle of the vast, dark entrance hall, the curtains were always drawn in my house, and climbed up the stairs. I'm coming for you, Dad. This was the last time I was going to speak to him. The last time I would pretend to give a shit. When I got to his room, he wasn't there. My father hardly ever ventured out of his bedroom when home. His male nurses sometimes took him to the library, and if I didn't find him there with Josh or Slade, then he was probably at the hospital. Again. I went down to the library, and sure enough, it was empty. I stood in front of the oak desk and swiped my palm across it. Once upon a time, this had been my mother's favorite room. We used to spend so much time here together. We would sprawl on opposite ends of the sofa, reading silently and occasionally glancing at each other, exchanging grins. I was only 6 when the tradition began. Sharing the silence, our love for everything written. Even after the car accident, when she became a quadriplegic, we still did this. Only she didn't sit on the sofa anymore. But I'd humor her, reading Little Women and Wuthering Heights for her aloud. Needless to say, they weren't my style. But that smile. Her smile was definitely worth the hassle. When she died, Joe and Dad abandoned the room. But then Daryl Ryler, Joe's twin brother, started using it for a whole other reason. Beating me. I knew I should hate this room after everything Daryl had put me through in here, but it always drew me back, because my mother's nurturing smile, a balm to my starving soul, was what I thought about when I entered the library. Not the way Joe locked me inside while Daryl smacked me with his ringed hand until my chest was cut and bruised. Not how she lied about what happened when he whipped me with his belt until my legs were covered with welts and blood. Head bowed, I now stared at my hands pressed against the desk. This was a position I knew too well. It's how I'd stood when they punished me. My palm shook against the wood, and I knew what it meant. I was going to crash soon, the sleep I found so elusive demanding its due. But first, I needed to get help to assist me with my plans concerning the will, and I also needed to break the news to Dean about her before he found out about it from his dad. I fished my cell out of my dress pants and dialed his number, tossing the phone on the desk after putting the call on speaker. Dean answered after the third ring. "You sent me Sue," he greeted, his voice filled with frustration. I leaned back. "What's the matter? I got the vibe that you were banging her. Thought you'd be happy." "As a matter of fact, yeah, I am banging her, which is why she wasn't thrilled when she walked in on me feasting on someone else's pussy on your office desk." I scowled. Things like this made me feel less guilty about breaking up him and help. Did she really need to be with a shitty guy like Dean? Like Trent? Like me? We were all cut from the same self-entitled cloth. I rolled my lip between my fingers, fighting the twitch in my jaw. "You offered her a non-standard contract without consulting me. What the hell went through your head, you dickbag?" "Not much, but I can tell you what went on under my belt when I did it." I actually heard the smirk on his lips. I sighed, shaking my head. "I'm calling you out on this next time we have our monthly meeting. I'm so scared I'm practically pissing my pants here," Dean snorted, still unaffected. "So who's helping you in New York? You fired the mouthy she-devil who worked here. I saw her packing up her stuff yesterday." Tiffany, my previous PA, was a bitch to work with. Not to me, of course, but everyone else at the office hated her. Almost as much as they detested me, and that said a lot. I found another PA. "I bet you did," he laughed. "Let me guess. Old and experienced, gray hair, pictures of her grandchildren everywhere on her desk." I heard the echo of a bathroom, a zipper rolling down, and him pissing. Fucking typical Dean. "Actually, my new PA is Amelia LeBlanc," I said, waiting for his reaction. But there wasn't any. I didn't want to play his game. I didn't. But after 20 seconds of complete silence, I had to say something, anything. So I did. "Hello?" The line went dead. He'd hung up on me. Son of a bitch.
Chapter 10. Amelia. I changed into something nicer and treated my parents to a restaurant at the marina for dinner. We ordered a bottle of wine, which I could easily afford with my new paycheck, and appetizers as well as entrees. They filled me in on their lives, which, surprisingly, they claimed were a lot quieter and nicer now. Baron Sr. was being cared for mainly by his nurses. He was much sicker than I'd realized. And Josephine Spencer was rarely at the mansion and often away traveling. The restaurant was on a boat called La Belle and was a little fancy for my liking. They picked the place. I would have never chosen it. Everyone in town knew Vicious and his friends had set fire to La Belle during our senior year, but no one knew why. The food was good, and the tablecloths were the kind of white you see in Tide commercials. I couldn't complain. I had food and wine in my belly and a smile on my face. Dinner was just a distraction, though. The reason I was here was him, and he was dangerous.
You working with Baron Jr. now?
Mama smiled in a meaningful way I didn't like. Her body was fleshy after years of being overworked and filled with home-cooked, fat-laden southern food she would have never served to her employers. But beneath it all, she was beautiful.
Tell us about it.
There's really nothing to tell. He needed a PA, and I needed a job. Since we went to high school together, he thought of me, I explained carefully. Calling him an old friend would be lying to their faces. I left out the fact that Vicious had said he needed me to do something shady for him, that he admitted he had less than respectable plans for me, that he'd already threatened to fire me twice. And I definitely left out the part where he told me he'd fuck me against the glass desk of his office for everyone to see.
He's a fine-looking boy.
My mother clucked her tongue in approval, taking another generous gulp from her wine.
Surprised he hasn't settled down with anyone. But I guess that's how it is when you're so young and wealthy. You have the pick of the crop.
I shuddered inwardly. Mama admired the rich. It's something Rosie and I were never on board with. Maybe because we had the misfortune of attending All Saints High and tasting the disdain and snobbery of wealthy students. The bitterness stayed in our mouths long after we'd left Todos Santos.
I never liked the boy.
Daddy said out of nowhere. My head snapped to him. My father was the Spencer's jack of all trades. He cleaned the pool, handled the landscaping, and was the maintenance guy when something broke down or needed replacing. He worked mostly outside and had gray hair, a sun-wrinkled face, and the stringy, muscled body of a laborer. This was the first time he'd ever spoke about Vicious that way. How come? I probed, pretending to be nonchalant while I poured myself another glass of wine. I was going to be tipsy by the time I got back home, but I didn't care.
He's bad news. The things he did when he lived here, I'll never forget them.
Daddy's lips were pinched in the kind of disapproval that made my heart sink. I knew my father. He rarely spoke ill of someone. If he didn't like Vicious, that meant he was rude to him, too. I wanted to poke at the subject, but knew my chances of getting answers were slim to none. Daddy wasn't a gossip. I paid the check, even though my parents tried to argue about it, and Daddy drove us back to the house. My room remained the same as when I'd left it 10 years ago. Interpol and Donnie Darko posters. The cherry blossom mural, the color slightly faded. That was what I loved about oil colors. They grew old with you. Some pictures of me with Rosie scattered around. The room reflected my teenage years pretty accurately. Only it didn't have a huge picture of Vicious squeezing my heart until I mentally bled out. I plopped down on my bed with its floral pink quilt Grandmama made for me and drifted into wine-induced drowsiness. My nap was interrupted by a scowling Vicious standing at my door, dressed in a suit and scary as hell. He still hadn't learned the art of knocking, which was a perfectly fitting metaphor for our relationship. I was always expected to ask for permission to enter his space, but he was always barging into mine unannounced, much like how he'd found me at McCoy's.
It's time,
he said, hands in his pocket, giving me his profile. He looked on edge, even more than usual. I sat up right on my bed before grabbing my handbag from my nightstand, still woozy from sleep. My mouth was dry from drinking too much wine and eating too little food. He didn't budge from the door when I got to it, just stared at me like a psychopath, the same cold, rich jerk who watched me like I was prey, but who still hadn't decided if I was good enough to be his next meal. And I was still the servant's daughter who wanted him to love her or leave her alone, just as long as he put her out of her misery. I tilted my head sideways, refusing to pass and risk touching him. Are you going to let me through? I huffed. His eyes, lazy yet brooding, gave me a slow once-over before they landed on mine. He offered a little smile that said, "Fight me for it, help." Whatever. I wasn't going to make a move until he got out of my way.
"Remember Eli Cole?"
he asked. Of course I remembered him. He was Dean's dad, a divorce attorney who dealt with high-profile cases, and a man who always looked at me with warm eyes when I'd gone out with Dean. He was nice, sweet, much like I remembered his son. I nodded. "Why?"
"Because he's who we're going to see. I need you sharp. Are you drunk?"
It stung, but I only arched an eyebrow and offered him a tight smile. "Vicious, please. We can work this out between us. Think about the kids," I mocked. Vicious didn't appreciate my joke. He scowled and moved away, allowing me to squeeze past him and walk out the door. I felt his eyes heating my back when he muttered under his breath,
"Fuck the kids. I'll stay for the ass."
In the car, privacy glass isolated us from the driver, blocking every sight and sound in the rear. I stared out the window. Boutiques, art galleries, and day spas, all decorated for Christmas, flashed by in a colorful blur of Main Street holiday lights. This was downtown Todos Santos, where I'd collected empty memories like old receipts. I drew in the condensation on the window, dragging my fingertip along the glass, painting the face of a sad woman. The rain knocking on the window looked like her tears. The silence was thick in the air, and the traffic and the rain became heavier as we moved through downtown. People were dashing to grab takeout food, shop for gifts, or make it to a Christmas concert. "Are you getting a divorce?" I finally asked. I twisted my head and glanced at him. He looked every bit the rich finance lawyer that he was. I, meanwhile, wore a retro dress, royal blue velvet, paired with silver leggings and cowboy boots.
"In a way,"
he mused, his gaze still hard on the window. Aloofness bled from his eyes. He hated this town. I hated it too. But while I had my reasons, I was bullied, mocked, and ostracized, he was practically a king here. It didn't make any sense. My heart drummed wilder at his words. He was married? "Do you want to talk about her?" I asked quietly. He chuckled, shaking his head, and I closed my eyes, trying not to let his voice stop my heart. It didn't belong there.
"She's a dead woman walking. I'm getting divorced from Josephine. My father is going to die any day now. I need to protect my assets and money from his gold-digging wife."
My jaw slacked, and it was that exact moment when Vicious's head swiveled and our eyes locked. "Why?" I whispered. I had a bad feeling this was not the whole story. I had an even worse feeling that he was going to involve me in his war somehow. I couldn't afford to take sides. My parents worked for Josephine Spencer.
"His will. He hasn't told either of us what's in it. Joe thinks she can give me trouble and claim some of the Spencer fortune. Whatever the will says means shit. Joe's in for a rude awakening."
"What does she want?" I asked. He shrugged.
"As much as she can get, I assume. The house here, a few more properties in New York, and the beach house in Cabo. Some investment accounts my dad played with over the years."
He said it casually, as if it was nothing. For me, it was a lot. More than I'd ever know. "Don't you have enough money to go around? Does it really matter if you have 30 million or 50 million in your bank account?" It was a genuine question, which I didn't know the answer to. He shot me a condescending look before blinking once, seemingly trying to control his annoyance over my presence.
"It's a lot more than 50 million. But even if it were 50 cents, she doesn't deserve a thing. Which brings me to the reason why you're here."
Just as he said it, the limo stopped in front of a house that was all too familiar. Like most of Todos Santos, Dean's childhood home was more like a mansion, but it was less vast and glitzy than the Spencer Palace, and it actually had character. You know, the things that make a house look like a home, full of color and art and light. Light everywhere, outside and inside the house, and Christmas decorations. A cone tree, reindeer, and snowflakes, all LED lit and mesmerizing in their beauty. Neither of us spoke nor moved for the first few seconds. Dean. I rarely thought about him anymore, but when I did, it was fondly. He was a good guy. A goofball with something more lurking behind that big smile. The jester, the joker, the clown. I never knew whether he was sad or happy, smart or foolish, ambitious or a slacker. He kept his cards close to his chest. Even after almost an entire school year together, I hadn't been able to even begin to figure out who he was. Luckily, Vicious had mentioned that Dean was in LA, so I was in the clear. I wouldn't be running into my old boyfriend tonight. Still, there was something urgent in Vicious's eyes as he stared at me, and I found myself nodding my legs and clenching my inner thighs, his scrutiny painfully gratifying.
If it comes to it, I need you to tell Josephine that you're willing to testify in court that I told you about how she polluted my relationship with my father, that she sent me to boarding school in Virginia to get rid of me and paid one of my teachers to report I was violent, uncontrollable, that she sent her brother Daryl by to beat me when I complained, that after I got expelled, her brother moved here and continued those beatings, that Joe claimed I was hurting myself, that it went on for years.
I felt my blood draining from my face and neck, my eyes snapping to him. Is all that true? I gulped.
I don't see how that's any of your business.
Over the years, I'd thought a lot about the conversation I overheard outside the library, about the man he was with, Daryl. I'd replayed the scene over and over in my head 1,000 times, but before now, I'd always come to the same conclusion. Vicious sounded like the one in charge, strong, secure. It was almost impossible to consider the idea that a guy like him could be the victim of abuse. Had it actually happened? Was any of it true?
No one would believe you told me anything, I said.
We were never close.
Pink and Black were.
He shot me a hard look.
Principal Followhill holds the records of every fart released in the hallways while she reigned at All Saints High. She has proof to confirm it.
Pink and Black. It was the first time in years he'd acknowledged them. Us. And bitterness hit the back of my throat. I'd always imagined that if we came clean to each other, it wouldn't be like that. Wouldn't be so dirty. You said this wasn't going to be illegal. Perjury is illegal, Vicious. Very much so.
What do you know about perjury?
Rosie and I are addicted to law and order. I know enough, I said under my breath. That made him heave a sigh.
Well, for the money you're being paid, you can take a bullet or two, he muttered.
But for the first time since we'd bumped into each other at McCoy's, I didn't like his eyes on me anymore. Not because he scared me, but because he looked sad. I couldn't bear it. It was physically painful to see those dark blue marbles shining with something that looked like pain.
Besides,
he continued,
I don't plan to let things ever advance to court. You wouldn't be under oath unless you have to testify. You just need to convince Joe that you're willing to testify. She'll never contest the will after you tell her what you know. Trust me.
So this was why he'd hired me as a PA and not anyone else. He needed someone who Josephine would believe had the opportunity to know him well enough that the story would be convincing. But I didn't actually know anything. He'd asked me to lie. I shook my head and grabbed the door handle on my side of the car. Why do you think that I'd lie for you? That I'd do that, even if it were true? He blinked once and smiled before opening his side door and stepping out. His eyes weren't sad anymore, just an empty, pretty shell, like the rest of him.
Because I said so, help.
Chapter 11. Emilia. Dean's house hadn't changed one bit. still big and warm and welcoming, painting a perfect picture of the privileged guy who had once lived there. After passing by a Christmas tree the size of my New York apartment and a garland in the foyer, we stopped by a large oak door at the end of the hallway. It was the first time I'd been in Eli Cole's office. I didn't know how much he knew about how his son and I broke up, but if he did know the full story, he didn't make it uncomfortable for me. Eli was older, with suspenders and a bow tie, an old schooler who looked a lot like a professor or a teacher in a Harry Potter movie. He was nice to everyone, always, never rude or patronizing like the rest of this town. They were qualities that had instantly endeared me to him. Vicious and I were sitting in plush leather chairs, antique-looking and newly padded, in front of his rich, dark wooden desk. Eli didn't have a computer or a laptop on his desktop, just a stack of papers arranged neatly on one side and a huge library of family law books behind him. My hands were sweating, and I tangled my fingers together as I mulled over the last words Vicious had said to me before we stepped out of the limo. "Because I said so, help." He knew I was weak when it came to him, knew every time he was around I was in a constant battle with my morals. Because I'd wanted to kiss him that day, despite being Dean's girlfriend. Because I wanted to lie for him today, just to put a smile on his cruel, beautiful face. I barely listened as Vicious and Eli discussed prenups and undue influence, wills and precedents for contesting them. Eli retrieved a thick law book from the shelves, and they talked about Joe and Baron Sr., both men hunched over the desk, reading through a decision together. Vicious looked too engrossed in what he was doing to care that I was having a meltdown next to him. So many things swirled in my head, tangling into a headache. I was torn between Vicious's truths, the one he gave me and the one he gave the rest of the world. And my truth, it was very simple. I didn't know what was right and what was wrong. I just knew the lines between the two blurred when it came to him.
Millie?
Eli's voice pierced through my thoughts. I blinked and straightened my spine, smiling politely in his direction. Yes, Mr. Cole?
Do you have any questions about everything we've discussed so far?
Eli knitted his fingers together and offered me an encouraging smile. I shook my head no. No one had asked me to do anything yet, which was good because my morals were going to win. Again.
Everything's clear?
I licked my lips. Yeah, I said.
Good. If not, you're sitting next to one of the finest attorneys I've had the pleasure of meeting. I'm sure he can brief you more about what to expect if this goes to court.
Eli said.
Your testimony is Baron's best chance. The statute of limitations for criminal charges has long since expired, but he can still punish that woman. For Josephine, I suspect having no money will seem as bad as jail. It's imperfect justice, but that you can corroborate what he told you is very important. I'm so glad you've offered to testify, Millie.
Offered? Vicious had told him that I was going to help them out without even asking my permission. Oh, heck no. I tried to soothe my nerves by telling myself that if Eli was so sure and positive about what happened, then maybe lying wasn't so bad. Maybe Joe deserved all of this for abusing her stepson. But then I remembered that before Eli was a nice man, he was a lawyer. A lawyer who was responsible for a lot of nasty divorce settlements in Hollywood. Cases that were all about money. He was not to be trusted, just like Vicious. Eli escorted us back to the front door, and Dean's mom, Helen, kissed his cheek while ignoring me. Maybe she knew more than Eli did about my breakup with her son. Or maybe she simply wasn't as gracious as her husband about forgiving me for what I'd allegedly done. When we walked to the car, keeping our distance from one another, Vicious said,
"And to think that she thought you might someday be her daughter-in-law."
Again, his voice was smooth and casual, but his words venomous. "Aren't you proud of yourself for breaking us up?" I bit out, hoping I sounded just as calm as he was. He stopped next to the car, ignoring the SoCal drizzle, and opened the door for me. I climbed into the back, scooting to the far corner to put as much space as possible between us. He joined me, but this time scooted closer than he had been earlier. Our thighs were pressed against one another. I was just getting used to his physical proximity again when he twisted his body toward me and captured my wrist. He guided my hand to his mouth, the hot air of his breath hitting the sensitive flesh of my wrist.
Dean ever made you feel the way you do right now?
He stared into my eyes, searching for something. I didn't know what it was, but I wanted him to find it in them. My stare dropped to his lips, and I gulped. I could almost taste them, like that night all those years ago. Soft and warm against all odds. And right. So right.
Dean ever made you shake the way you are right now, even when he fucked you? Dean ever get you that far out of your comfort zone? Your home? Your precious morals?
He smiled at me, his lips a whisper from my wrist, from the heavy pulse throbbing there. A shiver rolled down my spine, sending electricity to the rest of my body and exploding in my lower stomach. Suddenly, it felt too hot to breathe in the car.
Don't lie to me, help. I can smell your bullshit a mile away. Kind of like your normal scent, because you always lie to yourself when it comes to this. To us. I did you a huge fucking favor breaking you up, and you'll thank me later. Naked. For now.
He pressed the button on the intercom, and his voice turned from a hot whisper to a clipped order, breaking the spell.
Cliff, take us back home.
It was the end of the conversation, but by no means the end of the discussion.
Chapter 12. Vicious. 10 years ago. Help broke up with Dean, and for the first time in months, I felt like I could breathe again. My reaction to their relationship was irrational, immature, and completely out of line, but still, if I couldn't have her, no one else could. Especially not one of my friends. Dean seemed a little bummed, but not crushed. And every time he glanced her way at school, Trent or Jamie were fast to slap his back and remind him that this was for the best. And it was. If Help were in love with him, she wouldn't have broken up with him. But she wasn't. She said she didn't want to lead him on and that he was a good guy. Said that the situation was too complicated, and that the last thing she wanted to do was tear the hot holes apart. Too fucking late, sweetheart. For the most part, though, it was a good month. Trent's cast was off, so he was working on rehabbing his leg. A new Gears of War game came out. My dad and Joe were abroad. Austria? Australia? I didn't give a shit as long as they were gone. Amelia was lonely and solemn again, and Dean was back to acting like the funny stoner everyone learned to love because they had no fucking choice. I thought it meant that he had gotten over her ass and moved on to someone else. I was wrong. I found out just how wrong I was at a football training session at 4 o'clock on a Tuesday after school. At All Saints, the team trained year-round. We were seniors, graduating in a few months, but somebody had to whip next year's squad into shape. I was doing static stretches on a foam roller with a dozen groaning, bulked-up freshmen as I silently watched him approach. We'd barely talked to each other since that party. I'd told him I kissed Help. Of course I did. But I left out the fact that she didn't kiss me back because it didn't mean shit. Yeah, she didn't kiss me back, but she'd wanted to. Still did. The way her thighs clenched, the way her body poured heat into mine, the way she parted her lips and a little moan escaped from between them, the way her soft tits crushed against my hard chest. She was a terrible liar, and she wanted me. She was going to have me. Soon. Dean grabbed a black foam roller and plopped down on the grass beside me, mimicking my stretch, a stupid grin plastered on his face. I ignored him. I didn't like that he'd joined my group. Recently, we'd only felt comfortable in each other's presence if Trent or Jamie were around. Hola, Mr. Douchebag. What's shaking? He beamed like the stupid clown he was. We all smoked, but Dean was the only one who actually looked like a Woody Harrelson movie dropout with his chill smile and messy bun. I answered with a glare and a shrug. Think the team will be any good next year without us? His elbow poked my ribs harder than it should have. Is this fucking small talk? 'Cause I don't do that shit. I squinted at the horizon and plucked a few blades of grass, feeling restless. Make it stop. I shifted on the roller, deepening my stretch. It was obvious that he had something to tell me, and it was becoming even more obvious that he was gloating. Whatever it was, he was going to have fun breaking it to me. "You're right, dude," he said. "We should probably get to the point. So I dropped at your house yesterday. Trent wanted me to give you back your football gear. I'd lent Trent some gear months ago before he got injured. I'd forgotten all about it. It wasn't like I'd need it again. I wasn't a football star off to play in college, and thanks to his fucked up leg, unless a miracle happened, Trent wouldn't be either." "You weren't home," Dean continued, "so I figured I'd leave the gear by the garage. But then I bumped into Millie. She was trying to fix her bike outside the servant's apartment. She said hi. I said hi back. I may have been a little high. I may have told her she was a bitch for kissing you at that party." My jaw clenched, and I felt my teeth grinding against each other. Amelia broke up with him before I'd told him we kissed. He'd never confronted her about it because by the time he knew, she'd already dumped him. Dean flashed me a victorious smile and patted my shoulder, pretending to clean off some grass. I shook him off. "Dude, I'm a little embarrassed for you. Millie never kissed you back, did she? She broke up with me to pacify you, you giant pussy baby." That was it. He didn't get the chance to complete his sentence because I was all over him in a second, throwing fist after fist straight to his face. Fury blinded me, rage consumed me, and my body rippled with fire. I didn't want to hear the rest. The next thing I felt was Jamie's arms as he yanked me from Dean, but it was too late. Dean already had a split lip and forehead, and his nose looked like it needed to be put back in place. I launched at him again, even with Jamie and the second-string quarterback Matt trying to pin me down to the grass. I grabbed Dean by his shirt and pressed my nose to his. "You back with her?" I demanded, seething. He smiled through the pain, wiped the blood from his mouth with the back of his hand, and nodded. "Surprisingly, she wasn't happy about you lying to me, telling me she was the one who kissed you. So here's the deal, Vicious." He spat blood on the grass and got up, but didn't make a move to hit me back. "Millie's my girlfriend. You better come to terms with that. You had your chance when she first moved here, and all you did was be a fucking dick to her. What the hell did you think was gonna happen? She's hot. She's nice. She's fucking kind. Of course guys noticed. I noticed too. I knew you were gonna go batshit crazy on me, and I let you because you're a friend. Hope you got that out of your system." He winked. "Because my nose will be fine tomorrow, but you'll be a fucking mess every time you see us making out in the halls." I charged at him for the third time on autopilot. "What the fuck, Dean?" Jamie pried me off of him and dragged me toward the blue bleachers overlooking the field. This time I didn't resist. There was no point. Dean had won and I'd lost. "Get the hell out of here before I finish Vicious's job," Jamie roared, and I heard Dean laugh behind us. That weekend I had another balls-out party at my house. Dean didn't dare show his face, and I assumed help was with him. When I showed up at the pool with my sleeves rolled up, a sophomore guy looking to impress one of George's cheerleading crew accepted the challenge and met me on the tennis court. Defy was fair. Defy was brutal. But this time, Defy did nothing to dull the pain. From then on, everything changed between the four of us. Dean and I weren't on speaking terms, at all. I toyed with the idea of banning him from my estate altogether. It was completely doable, but decided that I didn't want to look like a total fucktard in Eli Cole's eyes. Besides, if Dean didn't come to help, help would go to him, which was just as bad, if not worse. The servant's apartment was a lot smaller than Dean's mansion, and Amelia's parents were always around. They had fewer chances to fuck each other if they were here. But they were steady again, and I saw them every fucking where. I saw them at school, parks, at the mall my dad owned, and sometimes even outside the servant's apartment. To be fair to help, she never made out with him in public, not even a kiss. They sometimes held hands, and that alone made me want to go on a killing spree. I didn't understand the burning hatred that flared every time I saw Dean, how it had transferred from her to him all of a sudden. Trent and Jamie were desperate to keep us all together. We were the four hotholes. We ruled the fucking school. Together, we were invincible. Individually, we were each just another big-headed jock. I saw where they were coming from. I really did, so we still all hung out together. We sat together in the cafeteria. We nodded hello in the hallway. But we didn't talk to each other much, and the subject of Amelia LeBlanc was tacitly taboo. She was like Voldemort. No one was to mention her name, and Dean pretended like she didn't exist when he was around me. I tried to pretend she didn't exist, too, but of course I couldn't, because she was fucking everywhere. I thought about her even when technically I didn't think about her. I thought about her when I worked out and when I hung out with my non-friends and when I played video games, when I studied and when I fucked girls. Jesus Christ, especially when I fucked girls. Until at some point I stopped fucking girls altogether because it reminded me that one day soon, if it hadn't already happened, help was going to fuck that douchebag Dean. I couldn't let that happen. It didn't make sense even to me, but I just couldn't. She was mine. It sounded irrational, but that didn't make it any less true. I didn't have to slap my name on her ass when she walked into class that very first day, the way I teased her, taunted her. I was normally too busy with the shit that was going on in my life to bully people. Everybody knew that the new girl belonged to me. I never in a million years would have dated her or even taken her out. She wasn't worth the trouble. No girl was, and especially not her. Still, she was mine to play with. Case in point, from the very first time her eyes landed on me, she looked at me like she was already mine. Swallow, blink, sigh, blush, look away. That was her routine every time I passed by her, even now. But Dean didn't care. The fucker just didn't care. Maybe that's why I did what I did toward the end of the school year. Help was going to celebrate her 18th birthday in a week, and even though douchebag Dean, the name had a real ring to it, never talked about her in front of me, I knew he was going to take her to a spa weekend somewhere fancy along the coast. It was all so stupid. Help wasn't a spa girl. He should have known that. If I were her boyfriend, I would have taken her to watch the cherry trees bloom, or give her new painting supplies, because the girl wanted to be a real artist and open a gallery or some shit. Not that I was her stalker or anything, like Jamie was with Miss Green before he started banging her. Amelia wore her weird personality like a billboard, proud and loud. From the way she dressed to how she was always covered in paint and doodled cherry blossoms everywhere. Dean, he just liked the idea of her. Pure and innocent, with her sweet southern accent, pretty dimples, and boho style. But I knew her best. I was in the weight room when Dean and I had our second conversation about her. It had been weeks since I'd planted my fist in his face, but my fingers still itched whenever he was close. This time we were in gym, an advanced weight training class only open to seniors. We had to bench press together because we were both late and all the other machines were taken. I was spotting him while he pressed a set at 180. He was lifting more than usual, and I could have sworn he looked a little juiced up. He grunted like a beast with every push of the weights. My fingers floated below the bar in case his body failed him. I wondered if he knew Help wasn't the type of girl who was into veiny, muscle-bound knuckleheads. "So you're taking her to a spa," I said, straight to the point. I didn't have time for fucking chit-chat. He rolled his eyes, his face sweaty and red, and let out a sigh. "It's her birthday. Would you rather I ignored it?" "I'd rather you break up with her," I answered flatly, my stare blank. There was no point in sugarcoating this shit. He knew I hated their relationship. And despite them being together for months, I knew it wasn't love. I saw the way she looked at him. She liked him, but there was no fire. Her eyes burned for me. Only for me. "Be reasonable," Dean muttered. He wasn't so focused on lifting anymore. He still looked red, but his arms shook now, and I felt the strain of the weight and our conversation affecting his body. I shoved my hands inside the pockets of my light gray sweatpants. It's not in my nature to be reasonable. "Break this shit off, Dean. You're going to college in New York. She's staying here. Do it now before..." I trailed off. "Before you take her fucking virginity." It had nothing to do with me wanting to mark her first. I mean, I did. Of course I wanted that. But I would have taken Help even if she'd slept with every single guy at All Saints High. It was her I was worried about. I knew she would regret it. Okay, fine. I wasn't worried about her. I was worried about me. What the fuck was wrong with me? I was on the fast track to losing my mind. Her pussy seemed to own me, and I hadn't even tasted it yet. All I knew was that I wanted it for myself. Too bad it was attached to that annoying little fool. "Before what?" He grunted, and his arm shook harder. "Before I sleep with her? How the fuck do you know I already haven't?" His hands turned white, but his snicker grated on my nerves, sending a rush of annoyance down my spine. He tried to press the bar all the way up and put it back in the handles. Sweat dotted his forehead. He was losing the battle. That's why we needed people to spot us. Only I wasn't spotting for him anymore. Instead, I grabbed the bar and pressed it down toward his throat ever so gently. His eyes widened. I wouldn't mess with me, Cole, I warned in a low voice. My gaze was lazy, but my jaw was tense. I couldn't help it. They call me vicious for a reason. I'm going to school wherever she does, fucktard. I'll stay here with her if I have to. She's mine. I pressed harder. What the fuck was he talking about, staying here? He couldn't stay here. But then I wasn't in a position to make him leave either, was I? Liar, I said, fuming. Goddamn, Dean. Don't fucking lie to me, Cole. You watch and see. His neck was purpling, but it did nothing to calm me down. I pressed harder and he gagged. People were starting to notice. I didn't care. I glared at him in warning. Dean? Everybody stopped what they were doing to look at us. Everybody. I saw Jamie and Trent from the corner of my eye pushing their way to us, and I knew I was running out of time. Vicious? Dean dared, smiling up at me. When Jamie finally got to us, I turned around and walked away, leaving Dean lying there with the bar against his throat. Someone else could help him out. I was so done with this fucker. So done. He took her virginity. He enjoyed it. I bet she did, too. It was during their spa weekend when she turned 18. Leave it to Amelia to lose her virginity less than a day before she legally could. There were candles and chocolate and all kinds of fancy shit that meant nothing to her. I heard all the details because I basically forced Jamie to tell me after it happened. Dean told Trent and Jamie on the fucking phone like a chick, making them swear not to tell me. But while Dean was BFFs with Rex Roth, Jamie was my closest friend. When I threatened to tell his mother, Principal Followhill, that he was bumping uglies with our lit teacher unless he spilled, he'd started singing like a fucking canary. That's when I made the executive decision that Help could no longer live in Todos Santos. She had to disappear and stay the fuck away from everything and everyone I knew. I wasn't stupid. I realized that I was preventing her from being around her sister and her parents, her boyfriend. I was banishing her from everything she knew. From a comfortable future, from money and opportunity, from family Christmases and blue-eyed kids with Dean, who was oh so fucking enchanted with her. From love. I was ruining her life. Because I was jealous. Jealousy was a weakness I didn't need and wasn't proud of. But I had to conquer it before it conquered me. That's why, the day they returned from their little spa vacation, I was already waiting for her in her room. I sat on her bed with my elbows on my knees and tried to ignore the fact everything smelled like her. A weird, heady combination of cinnamon, milky butter, and a singular sweetness that only belonged to her. I wanted it out of my nose, out of my estate, and out of my fucking life. Yes, she'd driven me mad. She gasped when she walked into her room and found me there. She didn't know that I knew everything, that she'd fucked one of my best friends. Amelia didn't look any different, but she felt different. She felt out of reach, now more than ever.
Pink suits you,
she remarked in a dry tone, nodding toward the pink flowery linens on her bed.
Who let you in, Vic, and what the hell are you doing in my room?
No one let me in. Her parents and Rosie had gone to the farmer's market or some shit. She dropped her backpack by the door and walked over to her dresser, pulling out some fresh clothes. I loved how she was wearing a crop top with the name of a band only she knew and another pair of Daisy Dukes. She looked tan, and a golden necklace was glistening against her soft, bronzed skin. I also liked that she'd called me Vic, but I didn't like that she didn't even look at me when she said it. You need to leave, I said.
I think that's my line, she sighed. I need to take a shower and fix myself a sandwich. Whatever you need will have to wait until I'm done. Or maybe until I start taking orders from you?
I don't mean leave the house. I mean leave this town, this state, this fucking planet. Maybe not the planet. I didn't want her dead. I just wanted her out of my life. Help slammed a drawer shut with her hip and squatted down to fish her toothbrush from her backpack.
Let me ask you something. Do you know you're crazy, or do you see yourself as a sane person? I'm genuinely interested in knowing.
She waved the toothbrush handle at me, then dumped clothes from her backpack into the laundry basket in one messy heap. I'll give you $10,000 to disappear. She rolled her eyes. She thought I was joking.
As tempting as the idea of putting a state or two between us is, I have nowhere to go.
$20,000, I fired back, narrowing my eyes at her. I was going to withdraw the sum from my own account. I doubted my dad would even notice, and if he did, it would still be worth it. I was losing my sanity fast because of her.
No, she chuckled, resolute. What the hell makes you think I'd do what you're asking?
I figured she wouldn't just leave because I told her to, so I shrugged and picked up my cell phone, staring at her, blasé.
I'll fire your parents, and then you'll all have to move back to some shithole in Virginia, and poor Rosie, poor fucking Rosie, won't have access to the nice healthcare plan my dad is paying for.
That's what makes me think you'll do what I demand. I smirked. Her eyes turned to slits and her lips thinned. She hates me. I hated myself, too. For the both of us. But I couldn't fucking take it anymore. It was too much. She was too much. Maybe because of the way she looked exactly like a younger Joe. Maybe because of how I still wanted to fuck her regardless. It made me hate myself.
You can't do that,
she whispered, her hands shaking as she gathered her fresh clothes and toothbrush to her chest. She loved her family so much, especially Rosie.
They work for your parents, not you. They wouldn't cave to their moody teenage son.
Amelia was trying to convince herself more than she was trying to convince me.
They wouldn't.
My eyebrows jumped as I feigned surprise. When's the last time they even bothered being here? Let's test your theory. I'll call my dad right now. To everyone else, it seemed like I'd always had Baron Sr. by the balls. Even though he was too busy doing the New York, Cabo, wherever the fuck Joe wanted to sunbathe route to actually be a parent, he rarely denied me. I assumed it was because of the guilt that plagued him from what he'd done to my mom. Hey, Dad, it's me. I spoke into the phone, swinging my legs up on her bed and crossing my feet at the ankles. I was still wearing my muddy sneakers. My phone was on speaker.
What do you want, Baron?
There was no mistaking the impatience in his tone. Help's mouth opened slightly. I popped my minty gum in boredom, sighing.
Just so we're all on the same page, since you guys are barely at the house anymore, am I correct to assume the staff is under my supervision? Meaning I can hire and fire if someone isn't meeting my needs?
I heard the splashes of the waves against my father's yacht, Marie after my mom, and ice clink in a glass. Scotch was my guess.
Yes, he said. You assume correctly. Why? What's wrong? Somebody giving you trouble?
I nodded with a triumphant smile, even though he couldn't see me. She could, though. Help's face whitened beneath her golden tan. Upset. Horrified. I was sending her packing at 18 with no prospects and no place to go, and I'd threatened to fire her family if she wouldn't leave.
No, everything's good, I said, still watching her. Speak soon, Dad.
I hung up on the fucker. He and Joe and Daryl were going to pay, but they were a problem for a different day. I snapped my gaze to meet hers. She tilted her chin up. The contempt she held for me was rolling off her rigid posture in waves. The silence was suffocating, and so was the idea that I was essentially ruining her life. I was choosing myself over Amelia, my feelings over hers, and it wasn't noble or honorable, but it was who I was.
Can I finish out the school year at least?
She asked so quietly it took me a few seconds to decipher her request. She was perfectly composed. Proud. Fuck, she was beautiful when she was strong. I was doing the right thing getting rid of her. I nodded. Leave the week after school ends, I instructed, getting up from her bed. I already missed it. And it goes without fucking saying that you and Dean are done. This is the second and last time I'm telling, not asking, you to stop this shit. Tell him you're leaving because you've met someone else online. Insist that he never contact you again. One glitch, Amelia, and I promise you, your family won't just lose this job. I'll make sure they don't find another one. She didn't answer, but I knew she got the message. She wasn't the kind of girl to puss out when it came to her loved ones. Her family was her everything. When I walked out of the servant's apartment for the very last time, I asked myself if there was a chance Amelia would ever forgive me. I wondered how much groveling I'd need to do if I ever wanted to get back in her life. No, the price was too high. We were done. But so were she and Dean.
Chapter 13. Amelia. The present. I wasn't gonna do it. At this point, I didn't even care about the money. I'd never cared too much for it anyway. Sure, I wanted to survive. Maybe take a breather from chasing overdrafts, but at what cost? Nope, I wasn't going to ruin anyone else's life with a lie. ever. I wasn't vicious. I spent my night lying in bed, thinking and analyzing the last few hours. There was a lot to take in. Vicious wanted me to lie and tell Joe straight to her face that if it came down to it, I would testify against her, telling the court he'd told me things he never had. I was a horrible liar. But a little voice inside me kept asking, "And what if it is the truth?" The answer was always the same. Even if it was the truth, it wasn't my truth. There were other ways Vicious could get what he wanted without dragging me into his war. At 4 in the morning, I finally kicked off my blanket and slipped into my flip-flops. I knew there was no chance I was going to fall asleep after deciding I wouldn't help him, so I might as well just read. I remembered the library I'd always wanted to visit over the years. This was probably my last chance to see it before Vicious kicked my family and me out. And it's the place I've been avoiding for 10 years straight, always wondering, aching, and peeking through these doors. But no more. I wanted to see what's behind them. I was done with his blackmail, done with being bought. This time, his money would lose. I entered the mansion through the kitchen, using Mama's security code. It was still the same 10 years later. I tiptoed to the hall, clad in the extra-large libertine shirt I called my pajamas, and headed down the ironwood floor, following the same route I had that first time I'd gone to knock on the library door. Vicious would be fast asleep upstairs. I'd read a little, inhale the scent of the old books, calm my nerves, and go back to my parents' place. I was silent, which was why my shriek almost rattled the walls when I pushed the door to the library open and found Vicious in one corner, sitting at an ornately carved wooden table with 4 upholstered wingback chairs. It looked like a study table you'd see in a public library, only much fancier. He lifted his eyes from the screen of his laptop at my yelp and stared at me long and hard for a few beats, until my racing heart calmed a little. Then, wordlessly, he pushed the chair opposite him with his foot in a silent invitation for me to join him. I didn't move.
"What are you doing up so late?"
My voice trembled.
"What are you doing trespassing in the middle of the fucking night?"
he retorted, his voice calm and tired. He'd changed into a white designer V-neck and a pair of dark denim pants or jeans. I didn't need to see them to know they hung low on his body. I couldn't sleep, so I thought I'd read a little. Never mind. I spun around, heading back toward the hallway. He stopped me.
"Help."
His voice was firm. I halted, but didn't turn around.
"Grab a book. I promise not to make conversation."
I rubbed my thighs and mentally scoffed at the idea of joining him, especially after how he'd acted in the car. "I'm resigning," I said, my back still to him. It was easier that way. I always caved when his eyes held mine. "I can't do what you're asking me to do. Please don't try and threaten me with my parents or Rosie or with starting a third world war. I've made up my mind. I can't lie for you." I heard the squeak of his chair as he got up, and I closed my eyes. I knew my resolve was going to crack with every step he took in my direction. Because, stupidly, I still felt things for Vicious. Things I had no business feeling. He stopped when he was standing in front of me. I felt his heat rolling toward my body. I felt my body accepting the warmth, drinking it in, enjoying it, despite what he'd done to me.
"Open your eyes,"
he ordered. I did. We stared at each other for a few seconds. His eyes were still on mine when he slowly peeled his shirt off of his ripped body. I kept my glare on his black pupils, too afraid to drop my gaze. It wouldn't be the first time I'd seen a male torso at such close proximity, but it definitely would be the first time I'd seen Vicious's. His white tee landed on the floor with barely a sound. I was hyper-aware of the fabric near my bare feet in my flip-flops.
"Look down,"
he instructed softly. My eyes drifted south, my gaze slow and wary,
taking in the perfect porcelain skin of his neck and shoulders, until I landed on his chest. He was hard-muscled and pumped, and covered with scars. Some pink, some white, all of them old and faded. Long scars, short scars, deep scars, shallow scars. There were many, too many, like a subway window that had been abused over the years. He looked like someone had doodled on his stomach and chest with a Swiss-made knife. Bile rose up my throat, and I clamped my lips together, feeling my chin quivering.
"Remember when I used to arrange the fights at my tennis court?"
he asked, his voice unruffled.
"I'm not gonna lie. Part of it was for fun, to unwind. But the other part, help, was because I didn't want people to ask questions about my scars."
He lifted both his arms, showing me the front of his wrists and forearms, covered with more scars. I'd noticed them before, of course, but I'd bought the lie. I'd thought the fights were to blame. I tried to swallow, but couldn't. His scars somehow felt like they were on me. My skin burned for him.
"Joe did this to you?"
"No."
He ran his tongue over his front teeth.
"Her brother Daryl Ryler, the guy you saw in this library that first day. Joe didn't cut me. After she first married my dad, she just smacked me around. A lot. And then Ryler moved here when I was 12.
He hesitated, but it didn't look like he was having too much trouble getting the words out. His face was still as emotionless as ever, his speech low and firm.
"She'd lock the door from the outside and leave him to punish me."
I sucked in a ragged breath. I wanted to kill that woman. Even after everything he'd done to me, I wanted his stepmother to die. Then something else occurred to me. "Did your dad know?"
"I told him, but he was never around much. His business was always his focus. Then, after I got expelled from boarding school and was back here, Joe convinced him I was hurting myself. Cutting. All the rage with troubled kids like me. She even hired a psychiatrist to assess me. One chosen by her, of course. There was talk of sending me off somewhere for treatment.